Season 5, Episode 7, Sheedy Dealings. It opens up with Sipowicz going to the third floor of a building, and when he gets there, he said, "I thought this was the third floor," and the uniform officer said, "This is the third floor," and it gets steeper all the time. When Sipowicz gets into the room with the DOAs, he says Jerry Lewis is standing guard out there. And they're dealing with the death of two roommates who are both strippers, even though the landlord believes they do office work, even though folks in the building say that they're strippers.
All the tea gets spilt when you die. Have you noticed that? Like,
the tea gets spilt when you die.
I kind of feel like everyone is just like, oh, they're dead. It don't matter. Like, we can talk all that shit now in the open. It's not that big of a deal.
Hey, did you know the strippers died? Oh, the strippers? Yeah, those dirty strippers, they died.
Oh, you mean Jenny and Tiffany? Yeah, the horse. Oh, yeah, the two blonde bimbos down the corner. Yeah, I got you.
Oh, my God.
That's when, no one gives a shit.
Mr. Lippman is running down his entire fucking day with them, and Sipowicz and Simone are trying to dodge him, because he keeps talking about the fucking dog and how he discovered the DOAs, which are Ashana and Carly.
Oh my God, he would not shut the fuck up about that dog.
No, he wouldn't shut the fuck up, period. And...
period.
And Sipowicz and Simone are trying to, get him away. And Sipowicz makes the joke comment, "Too bad we can't find the dog, because he could be a witness." And then Mr. Lippman's like, "Well, that's what I was telling your partner here." And Simone gives him a face like, "Why'd you put another quarter in him, you ass?"
Yeah, but that's one of those, situations where you're trying to be, sarcastic. That's when, your sarcasm can...
bite you in the ass.
That's when your sarcasm can bite you in the ass, is when you're trying to talk shit, and then, bam.
Eventually, they get all the information they can. They worked down at a strip club. Looks like they were sexually assaulted and then murdered. Strangled, it looks like. And Sipowicz...
Shocker. 5 seasons in, 2 dead women found, sexually assaulted. Shocker.
And as Sipowicz tries to leave the room and get away from Mr. Lippman, he says, "Any further thoughts? You ring him." And points at Simone and leaves. That's the opening of this episode of NYPD Blue, and we go to the theme song. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue. And this is the theme song to NYPD Blue.
Check your balls.
This episode is sponsored by Testicular Cancer Prevention. So remember, when you're listening to NYPD Blue Balls...
This episode is brought to you by that random Tom Green episode.
So remember, check your balls when you're in the shower so you don't have cancer.
Didn't Tom Green write a song called Check Your Balls or something like that?
Well, I'm pretty sure he did. Anyway, come back from the break. I'll continue with the Sipowicz and Simone story. Sipowicz brings in the father of the DOA, Ashana. Which, Ashana, it's like Shauna, but with an I.
You definitely know it's an I. I always thought it was an A.
Like Ashana, not I-Shauna?
Yeah, I thought it was always like Ashana, A-S-H-A-W-N-A.
I don't know. I mean, I could probably read it, but I'm not going to. He tries to go over what happened with the father and tries to get information out of him without letting him know that his daughter and her roommate have died. He gets that there was a ex-boyfriend of Carly who was abusive. I wrote his name down. I believe it was Rolf? Rolf Lupin?
Rolf. R-O-L-F. Rolf.
Rolf Lupin. And then, of course, the father breaks down in tears because his daughter has died. And he said she was doing all the right things, and he raised her right. She a stripper, though.
Well, he may not have known about the stripping, you know? He may not have had any idea about what was going on with Ashana.
He was getting the same story as the landlord because he thought they were doing office work as well, temping. But they were indeed getting freaky at the club.
They were temping those dicks.
Yes, they were temping those dicks. So they go down to the...
Dipping's kind of like temping. Every day is a new business, you know what I mean?
And there's a new person to please.
Yeah.
They go down to the strip club, and they demand to see the manager. And when he comes over, he's a real classy guy. Wearing a chain, couple buttons down, you know. He says that it's a classy place. What is it, the Tattler? The Tattler's a classy place. Before he gets over there... They show a dude who's cleaning down the pole, get a little spritz and then a wipe down. And Simone says, how would you like to have that job? And Sipowicz says, I think when I was drinking, I applied to that job.
Yeah, buddy.
The manager shows up and just says, so? Like an asshole. They ask to speak to Wendy, and he goes over to Wendy, who is currently chatting up some businessman, and tells her to go over to the detectives. And did you notice how the businessman kind of gave a, like, what the fuck?
Are all strip club owners or managers, like, are they always on coke and angry?
I mean, the lady in the last episode wasn't, but she also pissed on dudes.
So are all the male strip club owners always on coke and angry?
Probably. They probably can't handle the business.
The one woman strip club owner, she was like a woman in every other job. She was just normal doing her job. But
all
her
I know
thing was, well, her thing was is she liked to pee on people. That's a little odd.
All I know is that she better be making $70 to every dollar that dude makes doing in the same business.
Exactly. So it makes you wonder, like, when males strip, right? I get the dollar bills, but when females strip, shouldn't we be throwing like 70 cents up there?
Well, every time I go to a strip club, by the way, I don't go to strip clubs. Every time I go to the strip clubs and I throw my dollars, I go, I'm expecting 30 cents back. So,
I think we can solve this, Kirk. Let's just cut our dollar bills. Just give them 70% of the dollar bill.
You see?
And then you can throw the 30% later, and then they can tape them together.
Yeah, you know what, me and you? That's because we got those men brains. We solve problems.
Mm-hmm. I call my brain the world leader. That's what I call it. I call it the country maker.
Anyway, Wendy comes over, and she wants to know what's going on. I just loved it because she gets pulled away from the businessman, and he kind of throws up his hands like an unsatisfied customer. And I just like to imagine that he was like, what about my boner, bro?
Well, dude, Sipowicz and Simone just gave him his own set of blue balls.
Anyway, so they ask her about her boyfriend, because her current boyfriend is this Rolf Lupin guy. And asks if he was out on his own, maybe he could have done these murders, these rapes and murders. And she vouches for him, but says that he did have a little bit of time on his own, maybe in the night, to go do it. And then they ask if there was possibly any other people that could have hurt Ashauna and Carly. And she gives up a guy named Gary Hogan, who's apparently obsessed with Ashauna.
Uh-huh.
And then she's like, well, what happened to him? And they let her know that both of them died. And then the owner comes up, seeing she's distraught, and says, hey, you're up. It's your time to go dance.
Yeah, that always seems to happen. That's like the easy way in like scripts to get the stripper like out of the... Once they're done with all the information, and they're always like, how do we get this whore out of here? It's like, oh, it's her turn. Like, get her up there. Get her on the stage. That's all she's good for.
She's not a whore. She is just a stripper.
Tomato, tomato.
She goes up to go dance, and the manager's like, what's wrong with her? And they told him, well, your strippers died, Ashauna and Carly. And he goes, from what? And they go, murdered. And then he said, I know this is a big shock because this place is such a class act. And then they walk out on him. And then Carly starts to dance and then starts crying, which I gotta tell you, Carly, that's not good customer service. Okay? When I go to Arby's and I get my roast beefs, I want to see a smile on that guy's face as he hands me those ranches.
Kirk, I don't know what you're saying. I couldn't throw my dollar bills at the TV fast enough.
Then I gotta tell you, Kyle, you share something in common with Dennis Reynolds, who also finds tears erotic. Season 14 joke. After they visit the strip club, Sipowicz and Simone go check out Rolf, who is a mechanic. And he's, you know, a bit of a dick. He's like, oh, I was at Wendy's place. I haven't seen Carly or Ashauna. Why? What is she saying I did? And Sipowicz said, well, she's presently mute on account of being dead. And he made a joke about Ann Landers. Sometimes we don't break up with people like we should. And then when they want to bring him in for questioning, he attacks them with a wrench. So they put him down and get him into the car. It's kind of a useless scene because it turns out he has nothing to do with it. He's just a dick. But they put his ass down. So they go back to the house, and Gary Hogan shows up, and he's a famous face.
Yes.
He's a Dan Florick, or Flonick. I need to fucking write this better.
It's weird that, like, you have, like, a nice computer, an iPad that you could type notes into, but you still try to, like, read your shitty writing?
I do everything handwritten. It makes it more authentic. But Dan is a famous face because he plays Donald Cragen on SVU and Law & Order.
Yeah, buddy. Did you hear Maloney's coming back?
What? Maloney Baloney?
Yeah, they're doing another, I mean, why not? It's a cash cow. They're doing another Law & Order spinoff, and Maloney's coming back, bro.
What?
Yep, Maloney, I think Maloney and Harsh Kotte are back again.
Wow. I really need to watch all of Happy, because I watched the first couple episodes, and it was pretty sweet.
Yeah, dude, it made me so happy. Anyways, moving on, because I've also been watching Veep with Maria.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in that for a couple episodes as, like, this personal trainer, and he fucking kills it.
Yeah, that dude is so good. He was also on NYPD Blue as a great, great character.
But, great. Like,
he did a good job.
He was a rapist, but that's cool.
Allegedly. We're not sure. Gary Hogan, played by Dan Floer, I don't know. Floerick, whatever. And plays Donald Cragen on SVU. It's just nice to see him on an actual good cop show. But
whoa, shots fired. SVU is pretty rad, dude.
It needs to end. It's like The Simpsons. We get it. It's time to close up shop. Even if you bring Maloney back. I mean, it's been on the air enough.
But, I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, like, at some point, doesn't, like, Mariska Hargitay just go, like, okay, I got it. Like, enough rape.
Eventually, doesn't she catch all the rapists? All of them?
Don't all the rapists at one point get together and, like, try to take her out?
Or don't...
Because she is, like, the fucking Batman of rapists. Like, she's this, like, vigilante, like, sexual assault survivor. She was born into it through her her survivor tale.
I just love the idea that there's, like, a shady underground meeting, like the Dark Knight. And then the guys get out of desk and like, okay, so now the New York ring of pedophiles and rapists, we gotta do something about this lady. Who's gonna get her?
This is how you do it, right? This is how you do it. One, you're following one guy. Like, and he's like, it looks like, you know how they do those things in the Law and Orders in the openings where it's like a girl's walking, but like, she feels someone's following him, right? Uh-huh. Following them, blah, blah, blah. You do that, but instead of her actually getting like hurt, two guys bump into each other, and it's like, then they realize that they're both there at the same time, and then the episode is built on them getting to know each other, and then they talk about how, like, you know, Mariska Hargitay is, like, their enemy, and then they, boom, they start, like, this coalition, and it grows slowly.
Oh, God.
That'd be amazing.
You use that Irishman technology to make her look younger, so it's like they met up a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it's been building over the years. Look, why isn't Big TV calling us? We got the ideas. Give us a shot.
What is going on? No.
That would never play.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyways, he's back. Anyways, so Captain Cragen has been called in.
And Gary Hogan,
and he plays another trope that happens a lot. It's the guy that is obsessed with a stripper.
He's obsessed with a stripper, but he's like not going to hurt her. He's just has to see her naked all the time.
Is it that? Like, I always thought it was more of, they wanted them more than that. They were these women, like, they looked up to these women as more than just, like, these naked bodies. Like, they wanted them to be more than that. And, like, they think that if they could spend all this money, like, they could keep them around and make them theirs. Because that shit happens in Dexter, too.
Yeah.
It happens later in this fucking TV show as well, spoiler. There's, like, it happens all the time in cop shows when it involves, like, a stripper. There's always, like, that crazy person at the club who, like, follows them and loves them.
He mentions he has basically an over-appreciation for Ashauna. He says he wanted to help her, mentions about knowing she has a safe and she was saving money to become a model or an actress or a singer. Because, you know, it's so easy to do all three of those things.
Well, she was kind of ahead of her time. She was just going for the whole trifecta. Like, back then you kind of did one and just, like, got really good at that and then maybe moved on.
She was
like, But before that Instagram fame.
Ashana was going to be Beyonce, but then this dude ruined it. Hogan is a creepy dude, though, because he's leering at all of the women in the office. I wrote he's leering like a motherfucker.
Yeah, dude.
And then
his eyes are going to pop out of his head.
And when Simone gets a call about the phone dump at the apartment, he then mentions to Sipowicz that Ashana had the greatest breasts. They were perfectly spherical. Her roommate Carly had what he would describe as Cocker Spaniel breasts, which you know exactly what that means.
I kind of get it, because we had a dog that was half Cocker, so I kind of get it. Like, I half get it.
They get information on the phone dumps and realize we can just cut Hogan, so they do. And they go to the place where the calls were made from the apartment, and someone left a message. A guy named Tony Slater left a message that was basically him freaking the fuck out.
Basically an admission tape.
Yeah, because he called his buddy Terry. He's like, yo, Terry, I don't know what to do. I shouldn't do
okay,
that.
Racist.
Oh, wow. That's how he sounded, man.
Okay.
I didn't drop any N-words.
Might as well with that accent.
But he's like, I don't know what to do. I can't believe what happened here. You gotta help me. What am I gonna do? What am I gonna do?
Kirk, were people dropping N-words when they were wearing blackface? No. But they still were doing racist stuff.
You mean Lethal Weapon 5 and 6? Sipowicz and Simone bring in Tony, and Sipowicz...
Tony Baloney.
Sipowicz goes hard on him quick, wondering why he's got a soda, and when they ask him basic information about where he was lying early, so Sipowicz grabs the soda from him, and is like, why do we give sodas to lying assholes?
Well, I mean, based off of his tape, wouldn't you come in hard on the guy right away?
They do a good cop, bad cop on him. A little rope-a-dope, if you will. Cause
a little rope-a-dope.
Because at one point, because he's basically telling half-truths, and Sipowicz is getting... He's going super hard early, and Simone is laying back, and then they play the tape, which is basically him dead to rights. At one point, Sipowicz says, that's who you're giving these damn sodas to. Simone says, you're too busy raping and murdering, Tony. You don't think about all the science we got nowadays. And then Tony mentions that there was another guy in the apartment with him, and they were trying to get over on these women pretending that they were going to put him into a music video, but then the other guy was coming on too strong, and Sipowicz yells, I'm going to pop your eyeballs out with my thumbs.
Yeah, he takes it, like, so far, so fast.
Like, he's going crazy. Tony's like, can I just get some time? And they put him in the holding cell.
Which doesn't make you think, like, if Sipowicz didn't come in so strong...
Would he have just admitted?
They could have gotten something out of it, because the guy was so freaked out.
Well, it's...
Like...
It's also... Because when you play the next scene... Because the next scene, I think, is really key.
Okay.
When they bring Tony out, he explains that they were trying to get over on these women, which means, you know, bang them with little responsibility. And then he says his buddy Wright, who he starts off by saying he's a good person, which he isn't, because he did what he did in the story.
Wright, yeah.
He says Wright saw the safe and he wanted to steal it. And he said, I'm going to go get over on Carly. And he raped and murdered her and came out and said, hey, I raped and murdered her. We're going to have to kill Ashana too.
Things escalated very quickly.
And then he said, yeah, and Wright had to use the bathroom because, you know, he just got done raping and murdering someone. And that's when he called his buddy Terry, because Wright was like, you know, we're going to have to kill Ashana too. Ashana, according to Tony, Ashana shows up and realizes something is wrong and sees Carly and says, you can do whatever you want to me as long as you don't kill me. So Tony said, I had sex with her, which was consensual, which, by the way, it isn't, because she was doing it to live and not be murdered. And then Wright said, we gotta do it anyway, and then supposedly he murdered her. And he said, I couldn't sleep, and I've been sick about this, and I didn't know what to do. Now, my question is, it's a really good scene, but my question is, do you think Tony is lying, and he is just trying to find a way to form this to where he has little responsibility?
Ooh, good question.
Because the way he says it is like, yeah, I didn't rape anybody because she did it, even though she did it against her will, to get out of the situation. I didn't murder either of them, and I didn't steal the safe. So I didn't do any of this, and I called my buddy because I couldn't believe what we were into. Now, they can't confirm that that order of events happened unless they talk to Wright, but it is possible that he just was as involved as Wright was, and this is his story to try and get out of it.
Because, okay, so just so I understand the events, they're gonna steal the safe. One guy goes into the room with Carly,
well,
rapes her, murders her.
Well, according to Tony, he wasn't even down to steal the safe. He just wanted to have sex with Ashana.
The girls. So then the guy goes in with Carly, comes out, and he has raped her and killed her.
Yeah.
Then the other girl, they haven't done anything to her yet.
Mm-hmm.
So she thinks the only way to stay alive is to have sex with these two guys.
Yeah.
They do that, then they kill her.
Mm-hmm.
So your question then is, do I think or do we think that the guy, Tony, actually wasn't a part of this or, like, did take part of it?
Yeah, basically.
Based off of what I know, based off of how he was acting, I don't think he took part of it.
Okay.
Because he also was really quick to give it up.
But he wasn't, though.
If you're trying to stay out of trouble, you don't admit to being where trouble is.
Alright. The reason I thought so is he goes, I need to think about this more. And then they give him some time, and then when he comes out, he has this really long, involved story that weaves in and out to where he can be like, yeah, I had nothing to do with it. The dude was just crazy, and I didn't want to be involved, but we were in too deep. When it's like...
Do they ever say, like, that when they figure out the phone call, and then they're able to run him down and trace them down, do they ever, like, say what his rap sheet is?
I don't think so. I don't think he has one, but...
Okay, because that also means something, too, because then also maybe he is, like, he maybe isn't someone who's in trouble a lot.
Yeah, maybe.
So maybe he doesn't know. I don't know. I just felt like the way he was playing it, especially with the phone call. The phone call seems like it's something that is in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that he was freaking out about in the moment. And that's real.
Yeah.
And so, like, maybe he didn't mean for them to... Maybe he didn't mean to kill anybody when it started. And then maybe when that girl died, he just was like, okay, I'm going to roll with everything. Which doesn't make it any better.
Yeah,
But I don't know. Then, like, if he did have sex with her...
Yeah, because that's another thing. He said, I had sex with her, but it's consensual. First off, it isn't. Because it was under was under the threat of death. And two, that explains why his semen is in her, which, by the way, now you're going to say is consensual, even though,
Is the other guy's semen in her, too?
I don't know. They don't actually mention what is up with the...
What is in and what is... Yeah, that's what I'm about. Okay.
They just threaten the use of
it. I don't know. Because I feel like what NYPD Blue does as a show, as well, is if someone is, like, deserves their comeuppance, which I feel like this guy does, if he is lying, if he is making all of this up to save himself, mm-hmm. I feel like they would make him get his comeuppance in the end, based just off of the show itself, but also based off of what the guy did as a character. It just felt like he was the guy who doesn't get in trouble a lot and didn't know what to do or how to react, and so everything was done in a panicky way.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, the second question, because this has gone on longer than I thought it would, but the second question is, he's still going down for everything. No one is going to believe that side of the story. Certainly not a jury.
Oh, no, yeah, for sure. And especially if they find the other guy, he's going to go, yeah, that didn't happen that way. This is what happened. And he's definitely not going to go down for it by himself.
Yeah, he's
they're both going to get something out of it. So, yeah.
Because they raid Wright's place and they find the safe, which he can't open. Because that whole scene is interesting where they go to raid, they knock on the door, a guy comes out of the bathroom, and Sipowicz almost shoots him. And then Sipowicz pretends to be a plumber to get in the room. And then when they get in there, and they're like, sorry, seeing those dead girls makes me edgy. And they cuff him, and then they bring out the safe, and he goes, I found that in the dumpster. He's like, in the dumpster, and you only found one? The next scene with them... Sipowicz is on the phone with Ashana's dad, telling him, like, maybe if you talk to the people who run the funeral, they might help you with expenses. And even Simone is like, yeah, good luck with that. But Hogan comes back, And he straight out admits it's only to see Naomi again, because he's a fucking weirdo.
Yeah, he was being a weirdo with Naomi.
He's like, I wish there was something else I could have done. He tried to bring them Rolf, which they already knew. And he says, if you want to help, call up Ashana's dad and say that you want to help pay for the funeral expenses. And he goes, I should probably just say I'm a friend, right? Simone says, that's all you were. And Sipwood says, yeah, the dirty stuff was only in your mind. Yeah, I would like to know what he does say to that girl's dad.
Yeah, that would be super interesting.
It's like, hey, I knew Ashana from work.
Or did he ever...
Actually talk to her dad?
Actually, like, talk to the dad and give money.
He seems so oddly genuine. I think he would have, but he would have just kept under wraps that it was because of her spherical breasts. And what was great was, he's like, would it be wrong to ask for that lady's name? And Samoa was like, completely. And then he said, yeah, I really only came back for her. And then he just leaves.
So weird.
Should we do Russell or Martinez, or Medavoy, rather?
I don't remember them.
Okay, we'll do Medavoy's. So Medavoy comes into work, and a guy he worked with before named Sheedy shows up, and he's freaking out. He's like, I want to get ahead of this thing. My name might be involved, and I don't want to get wrapped up in something because I can't go back to jail.
Yeah. These two dumbasses.
This is, like, one of the dumbest stories, I think, ever. There's a lot of annoying things in it. It ends up basically with nothing happening. So it's really kind of the dumbest story ever.
The dumbest thing about this is, like, and I'm just gonna jump straight to it. There's a scene where, like, they're at this, this person's house.
Uh-huh.
And they're talking on the porch, and then this dude's getting out of the car. And he's walking up to the porch, but he thinks, like, someone's trying to shoot him. It is, like, one of the worst acted scenes I've seen in a long time. I just felt like that was so bad. Like, the guy who was pretending the guy, there was, like, the guy was, like, looking around like he was gonna get shot. It just looked so bad to me.
Yeah. Sheedy came in, and his buddy Archie asked him to get a hitman. Because Archie's girlfriend is currently married to a guy named Carmine, and Carmine put out a hit on Archie, so Archie wanted to put a hit out on Carmine.
Supposedly.
Yeah, supposedly.
Supposedly. That's what this episode should have been called. It should have just been called Supposedly.
Supposedly. So they decide we should probably work a sting where one of the detectives plays the hitman, and Medavoy immediately says he wants to be the hitman, and Archie goes, I don't know if you look the part, and Medavoy gets offended for some fucking reason.
Yeah, this was like, I mean, he deserved it, but this was basically like, hey, let's just, like, shit on Medavoy for not being born with, like, certain physical traits.
Well, what's great is the guy, Sheedy, I don't know what his first name is. Sheedy's like, no offense, Medavoy, but you're not a hitman. And then Medavoy's like, why, because I got red hair? It's like, no, because you're a fucking doof.
Well, like, yeah, that too. I mean, when's the last time you were afraid of a ginger?
Oh my gosh, Kyle. Anyway, Martinez...
Oh, I'm sorry, is South Park wrong?
Sometimes. Martinez kind of de-escalates it by saying, well, we got to run it by Fancy anyway, man, so there's no reason to get excited about it. They run it by Fancy, and Fancy tries to be diplomatic about it, where he's like, who's going to be the hitman? And Meta was like, I thought I would be. He's like, that's an idea, but maybe we should go with Martinez. And then Metavoy's like, well, who am I in the bar? And Fancy's like, I don't know. He's like, yeah, I'll be a barfly, and maybe I'll take one of the ladies as my wife. He's like, I don't know if you should be involved like that, Medavoy. He's like, oh, I'm not normal enough to be in a bar? And Martinez is like, maybe you're too normal and that's the problem. And it's like, fuck, Medavoy, just calm down. You don't have to do it. Just relax. The next time we talk to them, they're coming back from the meeting where Archie didn't show up.
Yeah.
And now everybody's pissed at Sheedy, saying, like, maybe you're just trying to jam Archie up. Maybe you're just fucking with us, but we don't have time for this. Fancy tells them, just move in on Carmine and go talk to him and see if he actually even has a hit on the other guy, and we'll go from there, or let him know that Archie's trying to get a hit on him so he can kind of shake it loose. And then this is the scene you're talking about. Medavoy and Martinez go to Carmine's place, and Archie put his fucking name on the mailbox. And then I wrote this because sometimes I slip into chauvinism. I wrote, dumb broad at the door is really annoying. and thinks,
oh man, that chick was so annoying.
And thinks that Archie has a hit out on him and there are snipers, and then Archie shows up and walks around like he might be sniped at any moment.
Yeah, dude, and it was just, it was really bad.
It was a bad scene. And Medavoy and Martinez make the joke, which is, it cannot be overstated. If you don't want to know, want people to know where you are and don't want to die, don't put your name on the fucking mailbox. They say that they're going to put on their sunglasses and scarves so people won't know who they are. And when they get to the house, Medavoy and Martinez are saying, you cannot put a hit out on somebody because that's illegal. And he said, well, Carmine has a hit out on me. I'm trying to protect myself. And he's like, well, you are presently screwing his wife and his house.
Which, I mean, that sucks, but it doesn't warrant, like, someone killing you.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And he says, that's when you just take the L, as rappers say. You take the L. You take the loss.
Take that loss. Tim Lambesis it.
Okay. This is a quick aside. They put out a new album. If that dude didn't try and kill his wife, a lot of people would really like it. That's the end of the aside.
Have you listened to it?
Yeah, I did.
Wow, where are your morals?
I gave it a listen. He did his time. He went to prison. He apologized to everybody involved. He went on a very long apology tour.
You're right, Kirk. I guess Judas did his time, too.
No, he died. That's very different.
I think that should be, like, that should tell you about this episode, that we are able to, like, go off on tangents on other things, because this episode was just kind of boring.
Yeah, it's not a very, good one.
It's two boring episodes in a row, because I think what's fault, like, I think the way they, like, are setting it up is, like, these two episodes don't really mean a lot, and then the next episode is, like, a two-parter, and it's super heavy, so I feel like they're, like, ramping up to that.
But yeah, just to get through this nonsense, Archie is convinced Carmine's trying to kill him, and they said, well, we're going to talk to Carmine too, so we'll make sure that he doesn't have a hit out on you, but please just stop being so stupid. And then he's like, well, where's Yvette? And he's like, well, Yvette already went home. And he said, yeah, she has a keen sense of danger. It's like, no, she has a keen sense of fucking cheating on her husband.
Yeah.
They bring in Carmine, who's played by a guy named Christopher Darga. He's been in a bunch of shit. It's one of those faces where, like, I know I've seen him in shit, and I think I wrote one of them down, and I can't read it. But basically, Carmine is just a boisterous, like, moron, and he was annoying, too, because he was like, how do I put this without seeming offensive? He seemed like a stereotypical New York, loud, boisterous dude, where, like,
yes.
Where even his laugh is too much. Because they say, hey, we hear you have a hit out on Archie. He's like, yeah, I don't have a hit out on Archie. He's just banging my wife. Well, we have it on good authority that you do. And he's like, yeah, you probably heard it from Archie because he's an asshole. He's like,
I know who Christopher Garga is. I got you.
And he essentially is like, I'm not trying to kill Archie. He's banging my wife in my bed. And I'm not going to do anything because I'm a coward. If you heard anything, you heard it from him. And just laughs at him. And then Medavoy just slams his head into their filing cabinet. And Medavoy and Martinez basically have a meeting where it's like, so we didn't do anything and we accomplished nothing.
Yeah. It's basically the Coen brothers of episodes.
Yeah, it's like nothing happened and it's all over. And then they just end it. The last...
Which makes me have to think that that had to have been something that happened.
Oh, you mean like Bill Clark like mentioned the story?
Like that had something that Bill Clark or like another detective had said like they had to deal with.
Just a bunch of morons who have no idea what they're doing.
That story's too specific, you know what I mean?
To not have actually happened in some way.
Yeah.
Makes sense. This next story is awesome in its own way. Kirkendall and Russell, they get a rich woman saying that her cleaning lady stole a necklace because she donated cans to a can drive, and her necklace was in one of those fake cans.
Yeah.
Diane had the rich woman, and Kirkendall had the cleaning lady, who I believe is from Guatemala, or am I racist? I think she's...
I'm gonna err on racist.
Is it Guatemala or Peru?
I don't think it was Peru.
It's a Latin American country, and...
Hey, Kirk, it's a Latinx.
It's a Latinx American country. It's a country that is Latin in nature not determining any gender.
Yes.
But it appears that the woman just made a mistake, and the rich woman thinks that she did it on purpose, because of course she did, because she's a fucking idiot. That the woman planned to take that can and give it to someone that they know. And Diane says, if we can find the necklace, would that be good enough? And the rich woman sort of agrees. They find out that the guy, Keith Driscoll, who was picking up that day in the area, didn't actually come back to the charity. So now they're suspicious.
He's double dipping.
They bring him in to interrogate, and he tries to act hard by saying, oh, you don't talk to me in the car, is that supposed to scare me? He plays the victim, like, oh, I just got sick, oh my gosh, what's the problem, I didn't turn in my groceries. And then admits to stealing when they say that he can get grand theft. And Kirkendall says the phrase, glad to see the spirit of volunteerism is alive and well. Or glad to know the spirit of volunteerism is alive and well. And while they're leaving there, Kirkendall mentions that I get a chance to play Greg's wife undercover. And Russell said, oh, you don't want to miss out on that.
Dang, Greg's catching no dubs today.
The Keith Driscoll mentions that he sold some cans to a bodega. And Russell says, we're going to go to that bodega and see if they have it. They bring a bunch of cops, like almost like they're raiding the bodega. Did not seem necessary. And
well, they were probably gonna have to search, so they needed more, like enough people to like look through shelves and shit.
They go in. The bodega owner doesn't want to admit that he bought cans off of him. Eventually, he does. They find the necklace and just grab that can.
Which is so funny. Like, why else would all those cops be there with that guy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, why of all days would all of those cops be there with that one guy asking you one very specific question?
And I'm gonna ask about something that the bodega owner said that made no sense to me.
Okay.
After she grabs the can and the necklace and walks out, the bodega owner goes, those are fake, right? And Russell says, yeah. And he shouts, otherwise I gotta kill myself. Why?
I think he was asking if the diamonds were fake. I think he was asking if the diamonds were fake. Because if they, and then she says, yeah, sarcastically. And then he says sarcastically back, okay, good, because if not. Because if those were real and they were, basically he was saying, if those were real and in my store and I didn't take them and sell them or like go use them to get money on my end, I'd have to go kill myself. But because they're fake, it's all good. Do you get it?
Maybe. Because I didn't even know that he could tell that he saw the diamonds or the pearls or whatever. I thought he was talking about the cans. Like, those cans are fake, right? Yeah, the cans are fake. Otherwise, I gotta kill myself.
What? If he's talking about the cans, it doesn't make any sense. But if he's talking about the diamonds or whatever was pulled out of the thing,
mm-hmm.
if he saw that and that's what his comment was, if, are those fake, then it makes sense to me.
Now that you said that, it makes sense. Before it did not. The next we see of Russell, she's talking to the rich woman, who she says, here's your shit back. I hope you've learned that that's not a good way to hide your valuables, and that your cleaning lady did nothing wrong. And then she says, oh, I guess you're right, I guess I'll keep her on. I think she gets a little snappy about where to hide your valuables. I mean, I don't remember the order, but Russell gets a little snappy, and the woman said, I think you mistook my thinking out loud for asking for your opinion. She defends the cleaning woman again, and then the woman asks for the rest of her cans back, like a C word.
Yeah, like, oh my god, how petty, dude.
And then Russell says, have you been keeping up your social security stuff for Esther? And she's like, I don't know why that matters to you. He's like, oh, it doesn't, but if Esther loses her job, then I'm going to have IRS all up your ass. And then she's like, well, I guess I know what you think about me. And Russell's like, oh, was that tough?
Russell's every now and then, when she can pick a battle, she tries to be like the Mike Tyson.
At the end of the episode, we have a romantic evening with Russell and Simone, where
we haven't seen them have sex in a while.
Russell brings over some strawberries. They're eating. Looks like it's the winding down of dinner. Simone makes a joke that she's been holding back on her dinner skills, implying that the dinner was delicious, I imagine. She brings up the baby thing again and says, I think we were right. I'm only 4 days late, but I know my body. And he doesn't, like, I don't know why she expected him to, like, jump for joy. I don't think any man would if at the first moment you tell him. I think they have to, like, think about it a second. At least I would.
Yeah, it is a life-changing thing.
he's like, well, I'm going to be excited if it is. And she's like, well, we shouldn't buy baby carriages. And he goes, no, we should be looking into getting married. And then there's a pause, and he said, you, Gina, and who's the other person? Another person in the office got pregnant.
Was it Medavoy's?
Oh, yeah, Abby. You, Abby, Gina, is there
something? Lesbian lover?
Yeah. You, Abby, and Gina, is there something in the department water? In the station house water? And she goes, that's not how it happens. And he goes, well, show me how it happens, implying that he's going to go deposit a little more. I mean, you know, it's just a scene where, like, oh, they're happy, they're going to go bone. But my thought was, like, is anybody going to clean up the fucking food? Because there was so much food on that table. Like, obviously, that speaks to my experience more than anything else, but what the fuck? There's, like, full plates of, like, mushrooms and shit. There's going to be flies all over that fucking place. That's how you get ants. That's how you get ants, Russell and Simone.
That's how you get ants. I mean, they can probably, like, fuck, clean up, and then, you know, by the time they're done cleaning up, they'll be ready for round two.
Anyway, do you have anything else for this episode?
No, not really.
You were right. These last two were kind of, they aren't duds. They're just not as good as, some other episodes.
Yeah, they're just, like, placeholders. It's kind of, like, just to get through the week, it feels like.
And they don't really, aside from this teaser at the end, they're not really connected to any overarching story, so they really could have put them in anywhere.
Exactly, other than the baby shit. Yeah, nothing.
Well, every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, and where you find a podcast. We're on Instagram at AsherBrothersPodcast, on Twitter at AsherBrosPod. I am there talking about the show if you'd like to speak about it. And keep watching NYPD Blue, especially because you're probably in quarantine still, and you need things to watch. NYPD Blue is on Amazon and Hulu, so get watching. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever format you're using to listen to it. It helps the show get seen, and more importantly, it may get some more eyes on the best show ever, NYPD Blue. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, there's a couple of books out there. One of them is True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons by the creators and consultants. There's also What Would Sibwitz Do?, a collection of articles written about the show, covering a wide range of topics. And then there's, of course, Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. It is a more official, unofficial version of what me and Kyle are doing here. If you have Hulu or Amazon, all of NYPD Blue is available on those streaming services. And if you can go to our Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast, Twitter at Asher Bros Pod, give us a follow. You can talk to me about the show. You can talk to me about this show and how much we got wrong. Thank you so much. Keep safe. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. And stay 6 feet apart from each other, for goodness sakes.